Today on the 21st show, this weekend, an estimated 7 million Americans took to the streets for the latest No Kings protests. There were gatherings in cities across Illinois. If you went, we'd love to hear from you, 800-222-9455. Or if you didn't go and maybe don't see the point of No Kings, we want to hear from you too, 800-222-9455. We'll talk about what happened and put No Kings in the larger context of American history with Gloria Brown Marshall, author of the book A Protest History of the United States. I'm Brian Mackey. That's all coming up today on The 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media, airing on WILL in Urbana, WUIS in Springfield, WGLT in Bloomington Normal, WNIJ in Rockford DeKalb, WVIK in the Quad Cities, and WSIU in Carbondale. But first, the news. From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. This weekend, No Kings protests took place across America. In cities big and small, organizers estimate roughly 7 million people turned out to express their displeasure with President Donald Trump. In Illinois, there were gatherings from Chicago to Carbondale. Here's a taste of what it sounded like in Champaign-Urbana.
Hey, go home! Donald Trump!
We are aware of other marches in Kankakee, Peoria, Springfield, Belleville. I'm sure I left out some cities. If you are in one of them, let us know about it. You can join the conversation throughout the hour today at 800-222-9455. We want to know what you saw, especially if you went. Even if you didn't go, what did you think of the protests? Where do you want to see the movement go from here? And you know what? Maybe you're one of the people who don't see the point of No Kings, or you think this is not how people should be spending their time and energy with regard to American politics. We want to hear from you, too. 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. So what is the point of No Kings? What do those millions of Americans want to see happen? And how do these protests fit into the larger context of American history? Joining us to talk about this is Gloria J. Brown Marshall. She's a civil rights attorney who's litigated cases for the Southern Poverty Law Center and the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. She's also a professor of constitutional law at John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York. And perhaps most relevant for our conversation today, this year she came out with a book. It's called A Protest History of the United States. Professor Gloria J. Brown Marshall, welcome to the 21st show. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So, top line reaction to what we saw happening this weekend. What did you think?
I think it's a wonderful thing when the people have an opportunity to communicate with their government, especially when they believe the government is not listening and is on the wrong path. And so protest is patriotism. Protest is patriotic. And to me, protest is a way in which the people show their power.
Did you participate in any of the protests either this weekend or this year?
I have been protesting since the third grade. And so I'm not just an academic. I also have a great belief in protest as part of my constitutional right in this country. And I did protest in Little Rock, Arkansas. I was in the No Kings protest there. And I just believe that it's important for the country to express its concern about the path the government is on right now.
So we'll come back to your third grade school finance protest. We can talk about that later. But what do you think about the strategy of the organizers here to keep this, you know, pretty upbeat, pretty positive?
I think that is the way in which this particular protest is taking place. Protest has a lot of different cultures, and it's expressed itself in many different ways across the country and across our American history. My book, A Protest History of the United States, goes back 500 years with selected protests and protesters. And that's how long we have been trying to wrestle with our government. And so this culture of trying to stay positive and looking at protests from, especially with quips on signs and protesting in ways in which it's not combative and it's not disruptive. I think it has a certain strategy to it, but I don't think it's the most effective strategy in order for this protest and the protests going forward to really change the way the government is going. And I'll tell you this, protest is also supposed to disrupt. And the disruption does not have to be violent disruption. The disruption is to say you cannot stay in comfort and continue to oppress people. And so when we have protests that take place on days, on the weekends and days that City Hall or our government buildings are closed, it's sending a message because of the very number of people protesting. But in order for protests to have the strategy and tactics that have changed the government in the past, there also needs to be more disruption, and there has to be a clearer message as to what the people want to have happen. No kings means we think this president believes himself a king, and you know, and what he said, that he said he was a king, and so therefore he has a regime, and he says he's going to be a dictator, and he has been a dictator. But I think it goes against what the framers wanted, but we're not getting that message across to the people we need to persuade outside of those who are in the streets.
Yes, I want to come back to all that, especially about the messaging here, because I think that is a fascinating point of conversation. But we do want this show to be interactive. And so especially if you were out there this weekend, or maybe if you are opposed to the idea of having going out there this weekend, let us know, 800-222-9455. And let's now go. We have Asa is calling from Niantic on line one. Asa, thanks for calling in. What did you see this weekend?
Yeah, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm great. Well, you know, I went to the protest. There were probably about 250 people there.
This is in Decatur?
In Decatur, yeah. We were down by the Civic Center, so on 51 and Main, you know, it's 36 that runs through town, so a pretty visible spot. People chanted, had signs, and there were people, I was surprised, from all walks of life. I'm 65, but we saw people in their 20s all the way until their 80s, people in wheelchairs, veterans, people of all races and apparently creeds, it looked like. So it was nice that people came together. They were pleasant with one another. There were some people who were wandering around giving their points of view, and people were very civil about that, which was great. And lots of horn honking and waving, et cetera.
I was going to say, because correct me if I'm wrong, Macon County is a went for Trump, as many central Illinois counties did in the last election. Did you have any much counter protest? You mentioned people going around giving their points of view.
Yeah, but no, honestly, I would say it was a very, very small percentage, 5-10 people we saw there, kind of wandered through. There were a few MAGA trucks parked across the street, you know, where people had parked a truck with their sign on it, which was fine. And a few people gesturing, not as politely, but overall, I would say it went really well. And it was nice to see people come together. I'd really love to see people get together more civically and have some more discussion about what's common, what we're looking for in this country. This is a great kickoff point, you know, to have conversations. So,
absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I wonder what you,
one of the protest.
Yeah, no, 100%. One of the things we've heard is that you know, it's not always clear what the No Kings, you know, protests are about, what people want. And I suppose you get 7 million people on the street, you're going to get 7 million opinions. Can I ask what do you want to see happen? What are you most concerned about, maybe?
Well, I would like to see our government go back to functioning the way it was really designed, where people had to come together with nonpartisan views and find, you know, compromises. That doesn't always mean the middle. Being able to have some discussion and know where things are headed. And I don't think the U.S. has had a strong directional plan for a while, whether it's health care or budget. We just keep kicking the can down the road. And I think people are tired of that. And they want someone who's not going to come in and say, I have all the solutions, but I'm going to help people to get to the solutions. I think that's what we're needing.
Asa, thank you so much for the call. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much.
And let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We're talking about the No Kings protests that happened this weekend. You can join us, 800-222-9455. We're talking with Gloria Brown Marshall, who's a con law professor, a civil rights lawyer, and the author of a book came out this year, A Protest History of the United States. Professor Brown Marshall, what did you think of what Asa had to say there?
I think it goes to what we were talking about. If we are thinking that is just to be civil and people talk to one another. That's nice and that's great in any situation. I think where we are now, we're dealing with people who are not playing by the rules in our government. We have a person who was elected to Congress and is not being able to be an official in Congress because the Speaker of the House refuses to have the person sworn in. We have people who are using the Department of Justice as a vindictive tool for anyone this president believes has harmed him or his reputation or made him feel bad over his lifetime. We have schools that are being targeted. We have federal employees that are unemployed because this person decides to pay certain people and not other people. Not only is this government off track, and these are just a few of the ways in which this government is off track, we have a Congress that is allowing the president to legislate. The framers of the Constitution, when it was ratified in 1789, wanted to have three distinct branches of government. It feared the consolidation of power under one person because that would be a monarchy. So no kings to me means that not only do we have a conservative supermajority on the Supreme Court that in many ways has undermined the confidence of the people in the Supreme Court. We have a Congress that's given over its legislative powers to the president and a president that's decided to extend its presidential powers well beyond what I believe the framers wanted. So we have a constitutional crisis on our hands right now. And no kings means to many people, we not only want civility in ways in which we discuss where the country is going, we want a country that's going to be going on the path of democracy. And right now, many people feel it is not.
What do you think of the some of the rhetoric that's been used against the protests? Last week, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, Mike Johnson, said, we refer to it by its more accurate description, the Hate America rally. You're going to bring together the Marxists, the socialists, the Antifa advocates, the anarchists, and the pro-Hamas wing of the far-left Democratic Party. That's the modern Democratic Party, end quote. What do you think of this idea that you know people on the right were promoting that this would be some sort of Antifa bomb throwing, setting buildings on fire, that kind of thing?
Protesters have always been maligned by the status quo and by oppressors. I like to give the example of dreptomania. Dreptomania was an 1851 term for a disease of the mind that enslaved people had when they ran away. When they protested slavery by running away and becoming fugitive slaves, when they protested bondage, they were called mentally ill and suffering from dreptomania. So that was 1851, and it's called pseudoscience now, but it was definitely called science then. It was always this point of maligning the Americans who were colonists, who signed the Declaration of Independence, which is a protest document. They were maligned by King George and those English. And so we've always maligned protesters. And then at some point, there's a turn when enough people protest in the street, when they figure out different ways to protest, whether or not it's selective buying or sending letters to elected officials or deciding that they're going to have sit-ins or teach-ins. But sooner or later, over time, when we start to disrupt the economy that's being used against us, our tax money is being used against us by this government, then the maligning will get worse, but then the change has to come after that.
Let's go to the phones again. Judy is calling from Monmouth. Judy, I understand you went to the Galesburg protest.
I did. I attended the Galesburg No Kings. Kind of at the last minute, I spend most of my days with my horse, but I thought, well, I got to go to this. And I just want to say it really hurt my heart to hear Speaker Johnson call these Hate America rallies, because when I got there, I never saw so much cheerfulness and friendliness, no nastiness, no nasty words. People were enjoying themselves. They were enthusiastic. I'd say about 75% of the several hundred people there were retired seniors, school teachers, there was a police officer, and others, and we were all just having a wonderful time, no meanness at all, and I just, for the record, want to say there was no Hate America there at all, and by the way, a lot of American flags.
Judy, thank you so much for the call. Really appreciate that. Professor Brown Marshall, did you see a lot of American flags when you were out as well?
I saw American flags, but we are Americans. And the fact that we are Americans and we have a concern about our government is the basis of American democracy and the basis of American citizenship. And what really concerns me is the same people who scaled the walls of the Capitol and have forced themselves into city halls and other capitals across the country, what they considered protests, armed people who are hurting other people, called themselves protesters. And no one turned around and said they were un-American. And they used violence and all this horribleness to make their fact known that they felt the election was undermined, which it wasn't, because Trump had lied to them. But they called themselves protesters. There have been so many people who have used violence on the conservative side, on the Republican side, on the right side, and they call themselves Americans protesting their government. So to turn around and say that people who have a different viewpoint, a different vision of this country, who are protesting, are somehow un-American, is not just disingenuous, it's also a lie and part of the propaganda that's used against protesters who want social change. When people want progressive social change, they're called all kinds of horrible names and they're undermined and violence is used against them. And this is not just happening right now. Think about the anti-Vietnam War movement and all the names that were called to people who were protesting the Vietnam War, protesting for women's rights. Women protesting for women's rights were called anti-man. So there's always some way in which something nasty is said about people who want positive social change.
All right, we're going to take a break on the program. We will continue with Gloria J. Brown Marshall. Her book is A Protest History of the United States. We're talking about No Kings. You can join us 800-222-9455. This is The 21st Show.
Support for The 21st Show comes from the Des Moines Art Center, located in Iowa's capital city, featuring works by regional, national, and international artists of the 20th and 21st centuries. Details are at DesMoinesArtCenter.org.
It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Our topic today is the No Kings protests that happened this weekend, how those fit into the bigger landscape of protest in American history. Our guest is Gloria J. Brown Marshall, professor of constitutional law at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice, also author of the new book, A Protest History of the United States. I want to share some thoughts from our texting group, which you can join by sending the word talk to 217-803-0730. And you can find that how to do that on our website, 21stshow.org. Brandy in Urbana says, I like that No Kings is an opportunity to build community and bring people together to become more familiar with local organizers. But the protest has no universal demands, so I fear opposition to the regime is more disjointed than it appears. We also heard from JD in Springfield, who said, glad to see so many people out protesting this administration's actions and approach to government. I'm happy they were peaceful. We need to schedule general strikes so they and their donors feel the impact of the people's will. And we also heard from a couple of people who suggested this idea of nationwide general strikes. Ryan in Champaign had a text about that. Adrienne in Carbondale. Professor Brown Marshall, is that possible? What would that take? What would be the effect of that?
I'm so glad somebody mentioned that, because there's got to be economic disruption. The federal government shut down and continued paying of certain federal employees and not others, and this favoritism to lackeys and loyalists is something that you see within a regime. In my book, A Protest History of the United States, one of the types of protests is joining a union. And it talks about labor strikes as a way in which the people can express their viewpoints on business corporations, the way they're treated as workers. But I do believe that strikes are something that are necessary to have economic disruption. And it is a form of protest. Joining a union is actually saying to employers, I want to be treated a certain way, and there should be certain mechanisms in place for me to have a voice at the table. And so I have in my book, Unions and Strikes as a Form of Protest. And so I really do believe when we start thinking about a sit-in, the sit-in during the civil rights movement was a form of economic disruption and a way in which we could tell the powers that be that we are not going to go along with business as usual. And that's why I say I promote greatly the people who are going out, and I give all the props that I can and support, because protesting is not easy, and I'm glad it's civil. But I also say that if we don't disrupt with our protests, and we can do so nonviolently, if we don't disrupt, then we are missing out on the tactics and strategies of hundreds of years of protesters, and that's what they've taught us. You've got to disrupt. If not, if the oppressor can be comfortable in their oppression, then they're going to continue to oppress.
You know, there's been so much like kind of small scale targeted economic action, right? Some people won't shop at Target because they don't support Pride as much as they used to. And other people, you know, won't eat at Chick-fil-A because Chick-fil-A opposed same-sex marriage years ago. And I have a relative who doesn't like shopping at Hobby Lobby because that company opposed the Affordable Care Act birth control provisions. You know, what would it take to actually do a mass widespread? I mean, is there precedent for that in American history? I think that's something we more commonly associate with other countries, right? Sort of general strikes.
Well, I've been a victim of and a participant in general strikes that have taken place in Europe, for example. My concern is what the caller or the email person or texter said, that what is the message? And we don't have the type of leadership that can come together with a clear message. And I think without that messaging, is it about constitutionality? Are we afraid that we're on the path of a monarchy, which I believe we are, because of capitulation of Johnson and others in Congress to the will of Donald Trump, and because they want to personally stay in positions of power and they don't care what they give up in their value system in order to have that power and that title. So how do we shake them out of that? And that takes some economic change. This is a capitalist country that's always been in conflict with its freedom and liberty roots. And that's what I talk about in my book, A Protest History of the United States, that the United States has the capitalist empire building side of the personality and culture of this country. And then we have the symbolized by the Statue of Liberty, the freedom loving parts of liberty of this country. They're always at odds. And so we're going to talk about liberty and justice for all community going forward, and not patriotism in this sense of only certain people with money should be at the leadership of this country, then we've got to get the messaging together. And I give props to the conservatives. They've been able to message, and they've been able to control media in a way that is very helpful to their side. We need to figure out how to get the word out, what the word is going to be, who are the people who are the fighters. If you have the title and you don't have the fight in you, then either you need to partner with people who know how to battle and know how to fight, or just step aside, because this is a real test of this country is whether or not it's going. We're at a crossroad. And so a general strike would be one in which not only are we going to have a message around a general strike, we're going to have a time period of the general strike, but we're also going to be able, like the Montgomery bus boycott did in Montgomery, Alabama, that we're going to say, I'll tell you another one we have. We had an economic strike when we saw dolphins being caught in the tuna fish nets. And people forgot that many people stopped buying tuna because of the killing of those dolphins. So that was a nationwide strike that changed the industry, and they changed the way in which they caught tuna after that. So we've had generalized national strikes before, and we can continue to have national strikes, but we have to have the leadership and the messaging around them.
What do you think of the name No Kings? We kind of hinted at that, danced around that a little bit earlier.
I think that it is a brilliant way in which we are saying our democracy is at risk. And this particular person who is in the White House believes himself to be a king. And his, you know, some people have called them gangsters, others minions, followers, whoever they may be in the Congress and other parts of the country, are using the power of our government in the way of a monarch. So I think no kings. I also like fight for our rights, because that's the other thing that's going on. The ignoring of the Constitution, even when this six-member majority Supreme Court goes against Donald Trump, to have the administration just ignore the orders of the court means that our rights are in jeopardy. Our basic human rights and constitutional rights are in jeopardy. So no, we want our rights. No kings, fight for our rights. There are many ways in which we can very quickly tell the government what's at stake here. So I do appreciate no kings. I do think that it is clear, but I also think that there are people, as you pointed out, who may believe they're not shopping at Target because of the stance against pride or the determination not to, to focus on having pride, but also anti-DEI. What happened to diversity, equity, and inclusion? That's, if we don't have enough people at the table in order for us to come together with clear messaging, then, for example, the African-American community is saying, you're having protests, they're not the most effective because we're not a part of them. And we have been a part of protests, especially Black women, for over 200 years. So why are we not figuring into the leadership of these protests so you can better understand how to message, how to be more effective? So I think there's a lot that has to be said about the messaging, but also the people at the table who are developing the messaging.
Okay, you hit two or three things I want to come back to in that, in there. This is great. So, okay, on the one hand, you know, no kings. It's an interesting framing because it sort of suggests if you oppose it, then you do want a king, right? So okay, there's that sort of brilliant bit of rhetorical jujitsu, and this, you know, some of the reaction we've seen. Our home station, Illinois Public Media, posted a video, you know, news video of what happened over the weekend. And a lot of the sort of people who support the president were saying like, "Oh, we don't have a king. Come on, this is just silly," as opposed to saying we want a king. I want to share a text we got from Bobby in Champaign, who said the Urbana protest was great, but I wish the focus had been kept on anti-Trump and anti-federal GOP. A pro-Palestinian message is fine, but attacking the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign was not appropriate. There are so many issues which could have been raised. I felt the Palestinian message was oversized. Now, I didn't go to this. I wasn't covering it. I didn't see this, and I don't have a lot of details, but I do wonder if No Kings is sort of a way of papering over the many very real disagreements within the sort of broad progressive coalition in America.
Well, that's always been the case. There's always been a lot of different areas and ideas and leaders within any major national protest. And for example, the civil rights movement involved many different perspectives, many different ways in which we would go about that movement. People believe that the nonviolent part of the civil rights movement was the only part. It was not. There were other leaders who had other ways of looking at things. And so I think and even with the women's movement, you know, there were branches within the women's movement. Black women were saying that the white women weren't listening to their issues and concerns. The working class woman was feeling like the middle class woman was taking over the messaging and leaving behind the issue of poverty and economic issues that the working class woman had. So there have always been these different viewpoints. I think what's happening here is the coming together of the different protests that were already taking place. So the anti-Israel or pro-Palestinian protests that were taking place this time last year, even before the election, those people are saying, well, what about what's going on there? You had other people who were upset about the deportations before the massive deportations started taking place. And they wanted immigration laws that would help people become citizens or have a path to citizenship. So those issues were already being protested ahead of this election. This has now exacerbated not just the fault lines, but it shows the silos people were in initially. And I think the coming together of those different groups at the same protest is positive. Because before, the different people said, well, if you're not going to be under my umbrella for my protest issue, I'm not coming to your protest. So they're beginning to see it's the same government doing the things to all the different people. And that commonality of messaging, I think, does fall under No Kings, because the money that's being given to Israel to continue to bombard Gaza, and, you know, as was said, make it into a holiday resort. You know, these are the same people who are anti-diversity, equity, inclusion, the same people who are leading ICE with masks on and the criminalization of our military by having them out arresting people, the National Guard. It's the same people. So if they begin to see the commonality of the oppressor, of the opponent, and for those people who say, oh, no, we don't have a king, this rhetoric is so, as I said, disingenuous, because I remember during the Obama administration when they, the right, the conservatives, were calling Obama a king, and he hadn't done any of these things. So the idea that they just want a Donald Trump-type personality, the evangelicals who know that, you know, he has done these things, but they're like, oh, well, he's not perfect. These are excuses so they can have their guy in power, and they don't care until the oppression, ball of oppression rolls and gains more speed and strength. And what the farmers found out, the farmers in Illinois and Kansas and other places, that ball of oppression is now rolling over them. And they are starting to protest as well. And those same people who are saying, oh, he's not a king, and this happens in every protest, you're going to find more and more people will be persuaded who are outside of the streets. That's why, if I must add this, the messaging is so important. It's not just the messaging on the signs for the people who are already there. We have to persuade people who are outside of your protest that they should support these issues in their own way. And protests must have all these various different supporters in order to actually make the social change that's necessary.
Well, now you're raising an interesting point, because a lot of people invoke MLK and the ideal of nonviolent protest as an ideal, which ultimately that was, like you say, protest aimed at persuasion. But we saw even during that era, right, as the Vietnam War ramped up, it was supplanted by people who favored a more confrontational style of protest, one that many on the left, I guess, then felt was more authentic to their anger. How do you think about those different approaches and what we're seeing happening today?
Protest has always been confrontational, always throughout the history of protest. And that's what the nonviolent protest then brought that was unique, that it was nonviolent when protest was usually confrontational and often violent. And the violence was usually against the protester. And so when we think about something as simple as the 8-hour workday, for those people around economic protests, the 8-hour workday was signed into law in the 1800s. It didn't become a reality until the 1900s. Why? Because of protest. So people can have rights that are on the books. The Bill of Rights was ratified in 1791. It gave us the right to petition the government for a redress of grievances. No one gets to that last line of the First Amendment. We have the right under the Constitution to petition the government for a redress of grievance. To petition is to ask. For a redress is a remedy, a grievance is a complaint. We have the right to complain to our government about what it is we feel they need to change. Usually, when people stand up for those rights, they are oppressed and the victims are objects of violence. To have a nonviolent protest meant that when violence was used against them, the protester, they did not react with violence. So we've confused what a nonviolent protest means in the first place.
Let me share a couple of more reactions from listeners, and then we need to take another break. Emails from Jim in Champaign said, I was there. Candidly, I found it to be downright heartwarming to encounter so many others who share my concerns, who are not disposed to dismiss all the essential facts of our time. Another email from David in Woodstock, participated in No Kings Crystal Lake, where over 2,000 people joined in. Very encouraged by the response to our current situation over the last several months. I think it's important to note that the 7 million that were rallying nationwide were only the most visible. There was overwhelming support from cars driving by. Not everyone feels comfortable demonstrating. The opposition to Trump in Project 2025 is much greater than those who show up to demonstrate. Thank you, everyone who has written in so far. You can join us, 800-222-9455 is the number. About 15 minutes left in the program after the break today. Again, you can join us, 800-222-9455. More with Gloria Brown Marshall, professor at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice. Her new book is called A Protest History of the United States. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about protests in America, especially given this weekend's No Kings protests. Our guest for the hour is Gloria Brown Marshall, who wrote the book A Protest History of the United States. She's also professor of constitutional law at CUNY's John Jay College of Criminal Justice. A few more text messages. Christopher in Brimfield said, I attended the rally in Peoria. It was amazing and very peaceful. The GOP was trying to spin the event as the Hate America protest. They couldn't have been more wrong. Cassidy in Urbana said, I went to the rally in Urbana. It was peaceful, beautiful, moving, and empowering. I hope that this empowers our legislators to fight for the rights of all Americans and not allow this mockery of democracy to continue. You can join us today, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. All right, there was a book a few years ago by Eitan Hersh called Politics is for Power. And he basically argues that too many people, liberals, progressives especially, have become political hobbyists, right? People who obsessively follow the news and think that counts as being politically active. What do you think of that? Do you see that changing now under the current climate?
I like that phrase, the mockery of democracy, because I think the mockery is that our democracy is being used against us. All the different elements that we took for granted that we studied in a certain generation in school, you know, are now being seen as fault lines and vulnerabilities that can be used against the people who believed in them. So those people who have been following politics, who are trying to understand, are of a certain generation. We have young people who don't have civics in their schools in K through 12. It was deliberately taken out to dumb down the generation of people and make them more dependent upon, you know, I guess the big brother or big daddy in office. Don't worry, I'll take care of it for you. So people are trying to figure out what their government is doing. They're trying to figure out how they can be a part of it. And just to let you know, even though I wrote this book, A Protest History of the United States, that's out now, I have an animated series called Your Democracy that was published by an NPR affiliate, WHYY in Philadelphia. Your Democracy, that's animated, that young people can look at, that teachers can share in their classrooms, that people can get a refresher course on our democracy. And I think that's what's so important here. We're still trying to figure it out. We're sincerely trying to have a role in our government the way we were taught we were supposed to. So yes, we could be armchair politicians, you know, or Tuesday morning, not even Monday morning anymore, quarterbacks. But it's all out of sincerity of trying to understand what our government is doing. And at the core of it is this: community is where we have to go. This is a diverse nation. And there are people in positions who want to go back to the 1950s when it was thought that there was only a white male leadership. And that was the white male with money in business. Those people are only supposed to be the leaders and everybody else is supposed to be a follower. In the 21st century, we are embracing community. And that's why so many people are saying the beauty of community and diversity in the protests. And it needs to be even more community, because as we go to the year 2045, this country is going to be even more diverse. And that's what's fear, the fear factor of these people who are trying to take us back to the 1940s and 1950s. They want it to be one in which is controlled by wealthy white men. And unfortunately, they can stall this, and that's what they're doing, but they can't stop community. And as long as we're unified around community, if we stay unified around our message, the power of the people will go forward. And the protests have to get bigger. They have to be persuasive. The messaging has to be clearer that we are about community and diversity. And that's where the nation needs to go.
I'll mention, if people are interested in Your Democracy, the series, we added a link to it on our website, 21stshow.org, with this segment. You know, earlier you mentioned about the fact that black women in particular were not part of the leadership of these protests. We had a conversation on the program a few months ago about black activists, some number of them saying they were taking a step back from protesting in 2025, and, you know, in the name of safety, maintaining their sanity, however you want to say it. I wonder what you think of that, and if that's something you see out there.
I've seen it. I've talked to different people. I've been traveling around on this book tour around the country. I was just in Nashville and Memphis this past week, and Little Rock, Arkansas, as I said, protesting the No Kings protest in Little Rock, Arkansas. That was peaceful, that was diverse, but it was majority white, and I didn't see a lot of people of color there. And I think there was a disheartening of the fact that people would vote for somebody who said initially that he was going to do many of the things he's already said that he is going to do, he did. And especially for Latinos to vote for him, for men, and even not as many black men, but, you know, certain black men, to have women support this particular candidacy, to go into what was seen as anti-woman type rhetoric. I think it's really disconcerting for black women in particular, because black women have been in the forefront of protests for over 200 years. Before we even gained the right to vote, we had political organizations and grassroots organizations and social groups that were part of protesting for women's rights. Even when white women turned their backs on us, black women did all of these things that were necessary to lay the foundation for what we have today. And for all the work to go into that and have it dismantled, you know, it did, you know, set a lot of black women back as far as their enthusiasm for protest. And why should we now protest for people who voted for this regime? That's a mindset, and it's clear, but I do understand it. I believe that, and I continue to do this work because Breonna Taylor was at rest. She was in her home when she was gunned down. And I do not believe that sitting out is the answer, because yes, rest can be resistance, but how long are we going to rest? We're going to have to go back into this, because this leadership needs us. Of the protests I'm seeing, they need us. And when I've spoken to groups around the country, and they've said that, you know, black women have not been in a leadership position, even in New York City. I had a chance to talk with people there, and they did not have black women in a leadership and weren't reaching out because they believe they can do this without us. I don't think they can, not effectively. The black women, and the fact that we have been in this for so long, we bring an institutional knowledge to this. We bring an insight and a creativity, not just creative signs, but actually having the creativity and strategy and tactics needed for effective protest. An effective protest in many different areas, not just in the street. You're going to have to tap into the knowledge of black women, and that has to happen sooner rather than later. We're going to have to come together on this. Black women, I want us to realize, yes, we've been hurt, and we are disgusted with what has happened, but it is something that we have to bring to the table, because it's going to roll. This ball of oppression, as I said about the farmers, is going to roll up to us, as we've seen with the black women who are losing their positions in government that they deserve, that they are being laid off, that they are not receiving the positions they should have in corporate America as well as in the government. So I think it's important that black women, black people generally, black and young people actually, because the young people were angry too. Why would these people vote for this man? And young people are looking at the elders and looking at the other generations with disgust. What do you want from us? Why would you do this to your own country? What did you expect? You expected to hurt other people, but it wouldn't hurt us and hurt yourself. So there are a lot of questions that we need to be in a room to talk about on the left, to the progressive side. There are some conversations that need to happen. But I also believe that we have to have the black woman in this fight in order to be as effective as we can possibly be effective, because the regime we're fighting against, it needs all hands on deck from the side of the progressives. And that means black women at the table.
Let me just remind listeners, we're talking with Gloria Brown Marshall. Her book is A Protest History of the United States. Just about 5 minutes left. Your book is part of a series from Beacon Press. It's called Revisioning History, or maybe Revisioning History, if you want to emphasize it that way. I wonder what that means to you.
That means that something that's going on just this moment, the banishing of books, because this regime, and I call it a regime because he called himself a dictator, and dictators have regimes. The banning of history, for people to not allow young folks and others to actually read what this country has done in the past. It wants to have this Santa Claus viewpoint of America. And you take your country, and I do, warts and all. I'm an American. I'm an African American. I'm a woman. I've been able to have a life in this country, navigating lots of obstacles of racism, sexism, and all other types of discrimination. But it is my country of birth. And my book, A Protest History of the United States, has with it in a through line my great great grandmother Eliza, who was born enslaved in Kentucky in this country and traveled as an exoduster. So I'm a proud exoduster, that group in the 1870s who traveled from the South to the North. And she then started again in Kansas. All of that is American history. And these people here are trying to ban over 24,000 titles banned in this country because they don't want to hear about American history. All of this is history. And you, if you learn from your history, you can go forward. But to ban it, I think, is part of this changing of what we want to think of as America. And America's old enough. It's a young country compared to the old world of England and France, but it's old enough now, mature enough to deal with its history. And if we don't deal with the history, we're going to continue to have time periods like this when people want to have this fable as America. Next year is the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence, a protest document. And we need to understand that we're old enough to deal with the good, the bad, and ugly of being American. And being American means all of these things are part of our history, our present, and will be part of our future. And trying to deny it is not going to make it go away.
Yeah, people may think they're done with history, but history may not be done with us. Is there ever a point where there's no longer a need for protest?
No. That's just like, protest is part of what human beings do when they feel they're not treated fairly. It's we can call it by the name of protest, but if you go back biblically, you can go back as far as you want. Go back to, you know, the Jews leaving Israel. leaving Egypt, I should say. Israelites leaving Egypt. People have protested in many, many different ways. They're always going to stand up when they feel they're being oppressed. That's human nature. And so for us to protest in our country is to be American. Is to protest. That's how America began, through protest, and we'll continue to protest. The status quo gets to a certain place, they are comfortable, and they want everybody else to be comfortable. And other people are going to say, no, that's not my comfort level. I want something more, something different, and I'm going to stand up for that right. And when I think about my ancestors in Protest History of the United States, I follow my ancestors. This is an interdisciplinary book that has history, it has law, it has interviews with people who have protested, but it also has this idea that we're going to protest in different ways. Survival is protest. When we re-envision history, it's incorporating what has been told as this idea that Santa Claus gave us our rights today. We wake up every day, Brian, with this idea of what we've gained from protest, the benefit from it. And so we need to not be freedom freeloaders, where we are resting on the laurels of people who protested in the past. We need to know that we have an investment to make for the future of this country, and that investment involves protest.
Gloria J. Brown Marshall is a professor of constitutional law at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice. She's a civil rights attorney, and her book is A Protest History of the United States, out now from Beacon Press. What a fascinating conversation. Thank you so much for sharing your time and knowledge with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you, and power to the people.
That's all the time for us today. Coming up tomorrow on the program, we are going to be talking about the weather. Several Illinois counties have been experiencing what the government calls extreme drought. That's a formal designation. Many others aren't faring much better. We'll hear from the Illinois State climatologist about how little rain we've gotten, why it's such a concern for everyone from farmers to firefighters. Thank you to everyone who called today, who sent text messages and emails. You can join our texting group by sending the word TALK to 217-803-0730. Almost gave the wrong number there. Once again, send the word TALK to 217-803-0730. If you're not in a position to write that down or send the message now, you can go to our website, 21stshow.org. While you're there, you can find how to join our texting group, our email address, our voicemail line, all the ways to keep in touch. We love hearing from you and what you think about what we talked about on the program. We also have links to our podcast there, or you can find us on Apple, Spotify, or YouTube. Just search for Illinois Public Media. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.